The future of ecumenical dialogue has been under the spotlight here in the Vatican recently as the Pontifical Council for Christian Unity marked 50 years since its foundation by Pope John XXIII in preparation for the Second Vatican Council. Council members held their plenary assembly on the theme of a new phase for ecumenical dialogue and met with Pope Benedict to look back over the progress of the past half century.
Sono 50 anni in cui si è acquisita una conoscenza più vera.
In his address to them, the Pope said the ecumenical journey has come a long way in building up new understanding and respect between the different churches and communities, overcoming historical prejudices, advancing the theological dialogue, but also that of charity and cooperation on issues including the defence of life, the promotion of justice, care of the environment, and common biblical translations. The Pope noted that many in the Western churches feel the ecumenical journey has lost its impetus. Thus, there is an urgent need to form new generations and revive the enthusiasm necessary to tackle the new challenges.
Our goal, we name it every time, it's always before our eyes, is full visible unity in sacraments, in teaching, in mission, in ministry.
At the end of the plenary assembly, I sat down with the co-chair of the Catholic Methodist Dialogue, Bishop Michael Putney from Townsville, Australia, to talk about the issues the Pope raised and about recent progress in relations with the worldwide Methodist community.
A number of things have happened. One of them is that we're just completing our latest document, which follows on from the document presented at the Seoul Assembly of the World Methodist Council, which drew together all of our work on the Church up until that point. And now we've dealt in these past 4 years with the question of sacraments, which has emerged continually over the decades, but it was time to deal with it in the light of everything else we achieved. So we've actually written a document on the Church's sacrament and on baptism, Eucharist and ministry, which we hope will achieve something in the relationship between our two communions. But at the same time, we produced a synthesis of all of our dialogues up until this point, which we have presented to both of our communions. So the Pontifical Council has passed that document on to the Secretariat of State, and the World Methodist Council is looking at it, and we hope that eventually we may have some kind of formal response to this document summing up all these decades of work since 1967.
How would you characterise, as you say, the fruits of these past decades, in particular this latest agreement? How difficult was it to achieve?
It hasn't been incredibly difficult because Methodists, may I say, are lovely people and very easy to deal with. They're very sympathetic people, and there's a spiritual friendship between us that comes so easily because all of us take seriously spirituality. John Wesley and Charles Wesley were concerned about scriptural holiness, and Catholics are obviously concerned about holiness, and we take the role of the Holy Spirit in our lives very seriously. So there's a sense as we work away on intellectual discussions that we're actually brothers and sisters filled with the Spirit trying to grow together. And so dialogue with Methodists is a blessed kind of work, one that I feel is a joy to take part in. One of the difficulties in dealing with Methodists is that they don't have a whole series of confessional statements like the Catholic Church does. They draw rather on Wesley's hymns and sermons as the foundational documents of their communion. So there's a little imbalance in the sources and the resources used to produce our report. So you often find a quotation from the Second Vatican Council followed by a quotation from one of Charles Wesley's hymns. But both of them will be making, we hope, very similar points. But it's an interesting way that each of us names what it is we believe. They're so different. The ethos of each of our communions is so different.
There's been a lot of talk recently about shifting goals and the accusation perhaps from the Catholic Church that many in the Western, the Reformed traditions, are not interested in the same goal that we thought we were talking about half a century ago, that is full visible unity, but more a question of reconciled diversity.
That's never been an issue in our dialogue. Our goal, we name it every time, it's always before our eyes, is full visible unity in sacraments, in teaching, in mission, in ministry. The whole goal that was outlined in our case in the Second Vatican Council is the goal of this dialogue, and it's never changed. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody in the World Methodist family, or indeed every Catholic, is interested in achieving that goal with the partner church in this case, because, you know, we're large families, and one of the tasks always of ecumenists is to ensure that everybody comes along. And therefore, I don't know whether some Methodists in some parts of the world would have a lesser goal, have foreshortened what it is we think we're aiming for. But that's never been the official nor the named goal in our dialogue.
It's also being said that looking back over the past decades, there were many great names in the ecumenical world, people who really believed and had the enthusiasm to push forward despite all the difficulties, and that today there seems to be almost a chronic shortage of great ecumenists.
Yes, this is a worry. This is one of the concerns of this meeting of the Pontifical Council, that who's going to carry the torch into the future? Where are the young ecumenists emerging? The enthusiasts among the younger theologians and clergy and so on are perhaps more concerned with culture and in the West, with the secular world and how the church will engage with that, rather than with relationships between the churches. And we don't quite know how to solve that problem, but in our dialogue, of course, we have the great Geoffrey Wainwright, who's one of the great ecumenists, one of the key drafters of the Baptism Eucharist Ministry Agreement called the Lima document, produced by the Faith and Order Commission of the World Council of Churches. And I think he's been on our dialogue for 20-something years, 25, 27 years, and has chaired it for perhaps 20 years, I think. So he's a giant ecumenically, an absolute giant, and we're blessed to have him, but he won't live forever, as you say.
What do you see perhaps as the challenges of this new phase? The Pope mentioned in his recent meeting with you the ethical issues which are clouding the horizon in particular.
This is a challenge even in our dealings with the Methodists, not that the people on the dialogue are advancing ethical positions contrary to our own, but clearly that issue is arising in some member churches of the World Methodist Council, and perhaps in some pockets of congregations and all in the United Methodist Church in the United States. Ethical positions that would cause difficulty were they to become the position of the World Methodist Council, but I think that's rather unlikely. It's not actually a big issue for us, though it could emerge, because the issue of these ethical questions are questions for Christians in every communion, and they're not absent from the Catholic Church. They are debated in there as well on grassroots level. So they're not going to go away, and we're all going to have to deal with them more adequately, I think, in the future.
Overall, if you look at the general population, how much interest is there in this question of ecumenism in Australia today?
I think Australians are as committed to ecumenism as they were during the enthusiasm of the first post-conciliar years. But they actually don't do much about it anymore, because they think that they've done it all and that there's not much more to be achieved. They're friends, they understand each other, they're quite happy to work with each other when the situation arises, they respect each other, enmities have been overcome. And when they want to do things, the things they want to do are about our culture, how to survive in a secular culture. And that's taking people's energy and interest. So there's not much happening ecumenically in Australia for those two reasons. I was suggesting that, in fact, taking Pope John Paul II's phrase of a mutual exchange of gifts, we ought to try to find ways to discover that we we can deal with our culture together, we can learn from each other, we can help each other in this common challenge of survival and mission in a very secular culture like Australia. Secondly, I think the people who have energy are not normally part of ecumenical relationships in Australia, and that's the more independent Pentecostal and evangelical churches. And I suspect if, with other mainstream churches, the Catholic Church were to begin to deal with them and to work out how to do that and how to have a mutual exchange of gifts with them, then a new energy might arise in the ecumenical movement in Australia. We might actually begin to do some things again rather than just give notional assent, to use Cardinal John Henry Newman's phrase, not just to have a notional assent to this very, very important integral part of the life of the church.
How much do you think events like, for example, World Youth Day in Sydney, or perhaps the canonisation of Mary MacKillop, events which can speak to the culture as a whole, how much do they help the ecumenical cause?
Both of those had an enormous impact on our secular Australian culture. A little bit, I think, like the visit of Pope Benedict to Great Britain, that World Youth Day, before it happened, was viewed rather cynically by the secular press. But they were converted. They were in awe during it and spoke in such incredibly positive tones because the young people were so winning. They were so enthusiastic. Crime went down in Sydney when there were 250,000 more people, mainly young, in the city. Crime went down. The police said they could have controlled the crowds by holding a piece of string between them. And this won the hearts of Sydney, and we could all tell wonderful experiences. Now, there were enormous ecumenical dimensions to our World Youth Day. Lots of other churches were involved in the groups of young people from around Australia, and some churches sent their own young people. They provided hospitality. There was taizé prayer. There were ecumenical encounters. So the rest of the other Christian churches, I think, if I may say, saw us at our best. So it built up good relationships rather than negative ones, except with some rather closed people who took the occasion to be a little more closed than normal. Mary MacKillop's canonisation received saturation coverage in Australia, again in a secular country, which surprised us. But the country took her to their heart. She became an Australian hero. You know, she epitomised the things they believed in because she was such a remarkable woman. So I think both events did a lot of good for ecumenism.
My thanks there to Bishop Michael Putney from Townsville, Australia, co-chair of the Catholic-Methodist Dialogue.